I'll do. Let's go Niners!
You're listening to Here's the Catch with David Lombardi, Matt Barrows, and Dennis Brown on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Well, the 49ers, this is a situation where I think that it's like they're in a boxing match. And this boxing match for the 49ers, the first round started very well. They landed a ton of punches. And now, though, they're just trying to make it to hear the bell to get into the break in between rounds, because they've taken a couple punches over the past 2 weeks. And they want to land one more punch on their way out, though, before they get a little bit of a rest in the bye week. And they're going to have a chance to land that punch in adverse circumstances against the Cincinnati Bengals. Hello, everybody, and welcome in. We got a live room on Friday night. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah, this is a very intriguing week. There's never a shortage of storylines for the 49ers, and Brock Purdy has had one sort of challenge after another in his very brief tenure as the starting quarterback, and he gets another one this week. Possibly, he needs to pass the final step of the concussion protocol on Saturday, tomorrow. He's been making progress. It seems like the 49ers expect him to pass that step. And if he does, Kyle Shanahan was enthusiastic. He said definitely Brock Purdy would start in this game. So, I mean, to me, it's just, you sort of liken Brock Purdy to a some sort of like hero, something out of Lord of the Rings, where he's got a different challenge to face each week. This is yet another big one. If he can pull it off, I think that would be a really remarkable feat for him and the 49ers.
Yeah, so the last week that we saw Brock Purdy on Monday night, we saw him really excel against the blitzes that we talked about during this live room the week prior against Minnesota, right? They blitz more than any other team in the NFL. I don't think that Brock Purdy made a single processing mistake against the blitz. The two interceptions didn't come until his final six attempts, and those came against drops in coverage from the Minnesota Vikings. And they also came after the play where we think the concussion happened, the helmet-to-helmet hit from Jordan Hicks off of a quarterback sneak. So Purdy was fantastic for, 95% of the game? And then it came to a sputtering halt for the 49ers, but it was after he had taken that shot to the head. Not to mention that it seems if you're going to order blame right now for the 49ers' struggles over the past 2 weeks, and especially last week, Matt, Brock Purdy would be far down the list compared to a defense that gave up 378 passing yards to Kirk Cousins, 452 total yards to a Minnesota offense that had been mediocre coming into that game, and 8 of 13, down conversions. It quite simply was a bad defensive performance from the 49ers. Exactly a year to the day after they played a really bad defensive performance against the Kansas City Chiefs. So the 49ers right now are sitting here hoping that this follows the same trajectory as last season, where the defense woke up in week 8 against the Rams. They want that defense to wake up in week 8 against the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, and that's sort of, to me, is the big challenge here. You've got Joe Burrow and the Bengals coming off a bye week. They looked good against the Seahawks a couple of weeks ago. I think it's clear that Burrow's calf injury, which was hindering him at the start of the season, is starting to become, I don't want to say a non-issue, but certainly less of an issue. And that was before the bye. Now he's coming out of the bye. I don't know if there's a better quarterback-receiver duo in the league. Maybe Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs have something to say about it, but the Burrow Jamar Chase one is special, and so it's a real challenge for this defense to get things right. And if they did, I think that would go a long way towards sort of squashing this. Is Steve Wilks a bad fit on this defense storyline, which, I mean, I think is a legitimate one, given what happened on Monday night. Now, you do have to keep in mind that the defense looked sensational to start the season. They were great against the Cowboys. They were great against the Steelers in week one. So Wilkes has been doing some good things. He made good adjustments in that Rams game Remember that was the Isaiah Oliver game where Oliver and the defense really stepped up in the second half of that contest. So it's been one blip. It was a big one, obviously, against the Vikings. And it revealed perhaps some cracks, but I don't think it's anything that's not solvable. And so I think one of our questions right now, Dave, is how are the 49ers going to put pressure on Burrow? What are they going to do differently in this game that they weren't able to do against Kirk Cousins in Minneapolis?
Well, I think that the initial cracks showed up a few weeks earlier, and then they really showed up against the Browns when the 49ers struggled against the run, because that's what's the basis of everything, right? If you stop the run, then the down and distance is better. The defensive line doesn't have to think as much. The 49ers scheme takes a big risk, and the risk is one where it's betting on its talent, right? When they play a wide nine and they leave those big gaps in between each of the pass rushers, they're saying, we can stop the run in our sleep with our front seven. We can win one-on-one matchups up front. We can set edges in one-on-one fashion up front, and our linebackers can come and kill people when they're flowing down from the second level. And the 49ers are saying, we believe that despite the fact that we're gambling toward a pass rushing alignment, we can still snuff out the run in a way that allows us to pass rush when it's an obvious pass rushing down, third and seven, third and eight. The problem is they haven't been stopping the run, and they haven't been stopping screen passes because they've been missing tackles here over the past couple of weeks, and screens act as runs, right, for all effect. They haven't been stopping those types of plays with a nearly enough regularity to be in the situations they've been in the past when they were the number one run defense in 2021 and 2022. They're worse than number 25 in run defense this year. So it's been a huge drop off, and that's what they have to fix. Now, the reason why I think that the 49ers are bullish about being able to fix it, and the reason why logically you would think they should be able to fix it, is because they have a lot of the same players. I will say they're missing Samson Ebukam, who set great edges against the run last year. He's now with the Indianapolis Colts. But let's not act like Samson Ebukam was an all-pro type of player. The 49ers do have the personnel in the building that should be able to tackle better. We already saw it in weeks 1-5, and it should be able to stop the run better. And I think that we did see that near the goal line against Minnesota when they absolutely stiffened up. So the ability for this team to execute is absolutely there. On top of that, Steve Wilks has to get better with his calls. And I'm not just talking about the two reckless blitzes that he threw out there. Obviously, the one at the end of the first half that he's already apologized for. But there was also a screen pass where he brought way too much pressure that turned into a big game for Minnesota, I believe on 3rd and 12 or 3rd and 13. But he just has to get better with the coverage combinations in the back end, because this is not the pass rushing fault of the 49ers defensive line. You talk to anybody in the locker room, talk to Wilks himself, who's, you know, calling card is the secondary. He'll say that his coverage combinations have not been on point. They were not on point against Minnesota. And because of that, the opposing receivers and opposing quarterbacks are having a little bit of an extra window to throw. And if you don't make that quarterback hitch one extra time, the pass rush is not going to hit for a sack. So when it's coverage and rush, right? Rush fuels coverage, coverage fuels rush. If you talk to any of the 49ers, and especially Wilks, whose responsibility is the coverage, he will tell you that the coverage is not doing its job right now, Matt, to fuel the rush.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell. I mean, it's sort of like a pitcher and a catcher. You get into a rhythm with your calls, and you could tell that Wilks just was having trouble getting into the right rhythm of calls against the Vikings. I mean, I think Kirk Cousins probably went a long way towards that. I mean, Cousins had a spectacular game. You know, I remember one play, the two highest paid guys in the line, Javon Hargrave and Nick Bosa, are both closing in on Cousins. Looks for all the world as if they're going to meet right at the quarterback, and he somehow kind of steps through that pass rush. It was just that kind of night for him and for the 49ers. Whatever he threw seemed to end up going into the right direction. Even bad throws that he threw ended up going into the hands of a Vikings receiver. You mentioned Samson Ebukam, And I thought as the 2022 season was ending that finding a pass rusher opposite Nick Bosa needed to be a priority for the 49ers. Ebukam was fine. He seemed to be stuck on 4.5 sacks per season every year. I thought Charles Menehue offered something. I thought Jordan Willis offered quite a bit at times as well, but that this team needed a better, more consistent presence opposite Bosa. And I still think that. Obviously, the 49ers spent a lot of money on Hargrave. And, you know, to my eye, it's been worth the cost. He's been doing exactly what he's supposed to do. But boy, that other edge position is still lacking. I know that Drake Jackson had the 3 sacks in week one, but he's really been a non-presence since then. Cleveland Farrell, the starter, I know he plays a lot of base downs, 0 sacks. I mean, he's played a lot of pass rush downs too. I forget what the number is. It's approaching 200. No sacks. I think that's a big gap. And I do think that Randy Gregory obviously has been providing something there. But he's not a big snaps guy. He's not going to get 40 to 50 snaps a game. He's going to be more of a complimentary piece. So, you know, in terms of trade, in terms of what this team still needs, where they need to get something from somebody moving forward, I'd say that that other defensive end spot is kind of sticking out like a sore thumb right now.
Yeah, and, you know, whenever that spot has done something here in the last couple of weeks, then the defense has blown it, right, you know, a couple of plays later. I remember the best left tackle in the game right now, the highest graded left tackle in the game is Christian Darrisaw. And Cleveland Farrell ripped around him. Remember that play in the first quarter, Matt, where Farrell went to hit Kirk Cousins and completely disrupted a play? He won one-on-one against Darrisaw. I was shocked. I was like, wow, who's that edge rusher that the 49ers got? Because he looked really good against maybe the best left tackle in the game. Problem is that it set up a 3rd and 12, and on the very next down, the 49ers, that was one of the poor coverage combinations. Fred Warner said that he was misaligned several times during the game. He blamed it on himself, but it might have been a Wilkes thing. Either way, he was 15 yards off the line of scrimmage. He was behind the first down marker, and the Vikings only needed 12, so they went to the tight end over the middle and basically wasted a good 49ers pass rush from Cleveland Farrell. But the point is still taken. He has not been very productive when rushing the passer. I do think they signed him to be an edge setter against the run. And I think that lately he hasn't been doing a great job in doing that. The very first play of the game, 22-yard run for Alexander Mattison, he ran left. Hargrave got blown up in the middle, but the edge was what was most important there. And Farrell was a total non-factor, was easily eliminated by Christian Darrisaw, who, again, is one of the best left tackles in the game. So you have to add that as a caveat. You look at Drake Jackson, well, Hawkinson, the tight end, pancake Drake Jackson. That's probably all the information you need to know how that's going. And the challenge for Drake Jackson was get stronger this year so you don't get pancaked in the run game. So you become a dependable edge-setting presence that doesn't have to come off the field, right? That could be there in base situations that obviously was going to be there in pass-rushing situations. And Drake Jackson has gotten bigger. He has gotten stronger. But as we know, Matt, setting an edge against the run, it's not as much about the size. It's more about the mentality. You know, there has to be a fighter's mentality there to be able to scrap through those blocks. There has to be that desire there to combine that with the strength to be able to make a difference. And the 49ers aren't getting that in the run game right now from Drake Jackson, which is why you're seeing his snaps go downward while Randy Gregory's snaps are going up. And I think a great example of mentality is Randy Gregory. Gregory's actually been setting good edges. He's actually been a productive 49ers defensive lineman. So I think this is a promising experiment. But he's only at, 242 pounds? So he's significantly lighter than somebody like Jackson. He's significantly lighter than a lot of defensive ends. But he still sets a solid edge. And he's going to get more and more playing time because of the fact that he sets a solid edge, even if he is lighter. So more 49ers need to be playing like Randy Gregory, like Nick Bosa, who's obviously been setting good edges. He's been playing well. The sack column just hasn't been showing up for Nick Bosa. But they need more of that mentality, because it's the stop the run, have some fun mentality. If you start setting those edges, then it's a domino effect of good things will happen, including sacks, or you force throws into what we call the kill zone, right? Joe Burrow gets the rid of the ball in 2.4 seconds, third fastest in the NFL. Even if the 49ers do everything right, they may not get a lot of sacks in this game. But they don't care. The other pathway to winning is to force Joe Burrow to throw inefficient passes underneath. That's what they call the kill zone. That's where you let Dre Greenlaw and Fred Warner have some fun. So this week, if they stop the run, if they do a better, tougher job setting those edges, Matt, it's either more sacks or the kill zone. But if they don't do that, well, then Joe Burrow and his trio of wide receivers can have a field day.
We got a nice question here from Anonymous U. He says, he or she says, how much do you think Steve Wilks working from the booth rather than on the sideline prevents him from collaborating with players mid-game, discussing what they're seeing, etc.? It feels like Saleh and Ryan's had a better vibe with the team, celebrating and working together on the ground. I know that I always kind of revert to Vic Fangio, who also worked out of the booth. And I know that if there was, he had a good person to communicate with. He communicated with Jim Tomsula on the sideline. And so he was able to make adjustments, was able to kind of get a feel for what's going on there. But I think it's a good question, because obviously, you know, we're talking about rhythm and getting the right calls, and you've got a guy in Fred Warner who knows this defense as well as anybody, having played in it since 2018 and having been the signal caller since then. So I think it's a good question. I wonder what the communication is like from Wilks in the booth to whoever that intermediary is on the sideline to somebody like Fred Warner. But it does seem as if perhaps that third party I'm not saying that person is not doing a good job, but just merely having that extra step might be a factor in what was happening on Monday.
Yeah, there certainly could be some communication issues, because the 49ers were very misaligned on the back end in this past game. But then again, you brought this point up earlier. They came out of the gate playing very well defensively. So it's not like we haven't seen good football under Steve Wilks. We have. We just saw a little bit of a slip up. And this is where perspective is so important. DeMeco Ryans oversaw much more performances than the one that we saw against Minnesota. But the 49ers did manage to stiffen up and only allow 22 points. They gave up a ton of yards. I'm not saying it was good, but it wasn't nearly as bad as Kansas City under DeMeco Ryans last season. It wasn't nearly as bad as Arizona under DeMeco Ryans against Colt McCoy in 2021. So part of this is just the natural ebb and flow of the regular season. And the 49ers, I think, right now are an ebbing portion of the regular season. They got to hit that flow again. And last year they hit it in week 8. I do think, you know, some people are talking about this Wilks not being in on the sideline dynamic, and they're saying that it's somehow affecting the 49ers energy. And I think that's just a bunch of fan talk. I don't think that that's in any way connected to the realities of the game. I do lend some potential credence to the communication patterns that you mentioned, because I have seen that the 49ers, and I have heard the 49ers talk about not being aligned where they want to be. So that's probably something they're going to look at. There's something they're going to fix. But as far as the energy level goes, and I know this is not what the question's about. I know, Matt, that this is not what you're talking about, but I've seen this posed online. I do not buy it at all. Energy level, these are professional athletes who do not need a rah-rah cheerleader of a defensive coordinator down on the field to play with maximum energy, especially since they already have one of those guys in Chris Kocurek, who's obviously extremely high energy on the sideline. So, you know, Wilks can coach from wherever he wants to, as long as the 49ers make sure that that chain of communication is solid. And we'll see if they can make the fixes that cause some of those issues, some of those misalignment issues against Minnesota, against Cincinnati on Sunday, Matt.
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel like the it's the job of the weight room coach to be the rah-rah guy on the sideline. You always see whatever team, college team, NFL team, it's always the strength coach who's leading the cheers, the enthusiasm on the sideline. We have another good question here. What is the number one positional need for the 49ers for a trade? Well, I just said what I thought it was. I think, you know, especially the way this team is designed, everything kind of emanates from the defensive line. So if you're lacking even at one of those positions along the defensive line, I think it does affect everybody. And I think if you did bring in a really good defensive end, I don't want to say a Nick Bosa type of guy, but somebody who can play the run and the pass equally well, can play 50 snaps a game, that would, you know, that makes a big difference. I mean, I realize that this team has already traded for a defensive end, and I realize that this team has all sorts of salary cap concerns moving forward. But I also feel like you had a Montez Sweat who might be available from Washington, or a Brian Burns who might be available from Carolina, or a Danielle Hunter who might be available from the Vikings, although the Vikings win on Monday probably encourages them that they can win the NFC North. But there are some defensive ends available, and better ones, I think, than are usually available at this time of year because they're younger. And I don't know whether, you know, it's just a part-time rental or what, but I do think that if your choice is between a defensive end and a cornerback, that you go with a defensive end this year, because I don't think that the cornerback play has been bad. In fact, I thought Charvarius Ward was having a fantastic game. If he even bats down that pass, I think he's the defensive player of the game because he had that opening drive interception and played, you know, really good close coverage for the most part for the rest of the game. So I think that they're still strong enough, and that a defensive end, an edge rusher, would only help the back end a little bit more.
I mean, absolutely. You can never have too many of those guys. The problem is that they usually come at a high price. That's why adding Randy Gregory was such a steal for the 49ers. It's already paying off for them. He's been good through those two games, and they got him for basically nothing. If you can add on to that and get more, sure, go for it. I'm just not sure if it's going to be feasible for the 49ers to do so. But, you know, it, just summarizing the defensive needs coming out of the game against Minnesota, and you can't look at this on an individual game basis. A lot of people, the last thing they remember are the struggles against Minnesota, and they think that everything is broken. It could look fixed in a hurry. You know, stuff in the NFL is never as good as it looks, and never as bad as it looks, right? Never as good as it looks in a win, and never as bad as it looks in a loss. So it's one of those things where we have to look at the larger sample. And I think in the larger sample, the 49ers are, just like any good defense, they have to play it very complementarily. The rush has to fuel the coverage, and the coverage has to fuel the rush. The most recent game that we have as a data point showed that the coverage was misaligned. I don't think that we can deduce from what we saw at Minnesota that the cornerbacks and the safeties were somehow overmatched. They literally were misaligned. Like, if you go back and watch the tape, the 49ers just weren't in the right position. So it's true that Steve Wilks needs to do a better job, and he himself has acknowledged that. On top of that, Matt, the 49ers missed 9 tackles against Minnesota. They missed a combined 9 tackles over the prior 2 weeks, or over the prior 3 weeks before the Cleveland game, right? So the 3 weeks leading into the Cleveland game, they missed 9 total tackles. Over the past 2 weeks, they've missed 19, including 9 against Minnesota. So they just need to revert back to what they were doing tackling wise. It just doesn't seem, you know, you hear Fred Warner talking about execution after the game, and a lot of times it's just a buzzword, but the numbers actually flesh that out, and the tape actually fleshes that out. They're not executing. Like, Charvarius Ward had a chance at a big interception. And I'm not saying it wasn't a bad call. It was a bad call from Steve Wilks. You don't run cover zero with only 16 seconds left and the opponent doesn't have a timeout. But even despite the bad call, they had a chance for that to be an interception. You know, even despite some of the misalignments, they missed 19 tackles instead of, you know, and essentially doubled or tripled their missed tackle rate. So you go back and you do those things right, even with some of the flaws, you know, the larger overarching flaws that I've been talking about, like the run defense, and you're talking about the defensive end position and those all crisscross and intertwine. Even with those, the 49ers probably win these last two games. So sometimes the quickest fix, at least to get back on a winning track, is to go back to basics, execute the fundamentals better. And I think that's definitely true in this situation for the 49ers.
David is driving in the car right now, so you probably didn't feel the, I think there was an earthquake just now. Fairly good rattle here in San Jose. I'd say it's in the upper twos or early lower threes.
But, I wonder, you're not kidding. There was an earthquake? Really? Yeah,
did anybody else who's listening right now feel that? We'll see if we get any response.
We'll see.
But yeah,
I thought you were joking. That was that. I didn't realize there was an actual earthquake. Whenever there's an earthquake, you got to get on Twitter. Everybody has to tweet earthquake. It's like a ritual.
Yeah, I think people just want to be reassured that that they actually felt what they thought they felt. But it certainly felt like one to me. But no, I agree with you, and I actually kind of feel like the 49ers may have been feeling a little bit too good about themselves coming out of that Dallas game. I mean, that was a big, big win for them. And you saw them get into the pregame scrap in Cleveland before then. And it's human nature. You end up thinking that you're a little bit better than you actually are, and you get humbled, and then you have to kind of redouble and get good again. I also think, getting back to the tackling, that Trey Greenlaw dealing with this hamstring strain, I'm not sure that can be overstated. He obviously has not been his usual self in recent weeks, and he's, you know, people ask, why are they struggling with the screen? Why are they struggling with the outside runs? That's Dre Greenlaw's bailiwick. He's very good getting to the sideline, and if he's hindered a little bit, then I think you're going to see the effects of that. And I think that was the case certainly against Cleveland and probably against the Vikings as well. Yeah, they're saying 4.0, David. So that's a fairly big one.
Wow, 4.0. And where was it centered?
Let me see. Let me hop on the old Twitter machine here.
Because that's thanks for narrowing it down. I'm in San Francisco. You're in San Jose, so that's obviously going to be a
It looks like sort of the Alum Rock area, sort of that.
Okay,
east,
so that's San Jose.
No, it's further up. It's way up there.
You're saying it's in the hills in the East Bay somewhere?
It says 2 miles from Millbrae, so
wow,
right there on the peninsula, yeah.
So, I didn't feel it, but I was close to it because I'm in the southern part of San Francisco right now. So, hopefully, everybody's okay. I don't see any chaos in the streets up here. So, I mean, 4.0, it's one of those sizes that Californians usually laugh at, but a poorly timed 4.0, a poorly located 4.0 can still do some damage. So hopefully it didn't do
for sure.
any damage. Anyway, who'd you mention right before pivoted to the earthquake there? Dre Greenlaw, yeah. Dre Greenlaw, the term kill zone yesterday from Steve Wilks stuck with me because Dre Greenlaw is the guy that loves to operate in the kill zone. And again, the kill zone is that first 5 yards past the line of scrimmage where the 49ers want to funnel all opposing passes. Again, the 49ers don't care if they get sacks, don't get sacks. But if they don't get sacks, they want the passes to go to the kill zone. They want to bother the quarterback enough to where he just has to dump it off. They realize that sacks aren't always going to be in the cards if it's a guy with a quick release. Tom Brady threw 55 times against the 49ers last year and didn't get sacked. But Tom Brady was forced to revert the throws into the kill zone all game. And Dre Greenlaw had a lot of fun with that. He even intercepted Tom Brady and then got Tom Brady to autograph the football after the game. That was one of those really funny full circle moments. But anyway, when I heard Steve Wilkes say we got to get him to throw into the kill zone, Burrow, a lot like Brady, has a really quick release. And he's been hurt this year. And I think that's even accentuated Burrow getting rid of the ball quickly because he can't throw downfield. So they've been running a lot of trips formations with their trio of wide receivers, and they're throwing short. So they're trying to go into the kill zone, Matt. The Bengals are trying to throw short. They have the highest screen pass efficiency in football. It's because they're going to the wide receivers, and the 49ers are trying to funnel those throws into the kill zone. And that goes back to Dre Greenlaw. Right, Dre Greenlaw is the guy that has to patrol that part of the field. Fred Warner too, Talanoa Hufanga too. But it all comes down to them cleaning up the mess if the 49ers pass rush is able to set up a situation in which those throws are delivered to the inefficient part of the field where then those defenders can feast.
Yeah, and it goes back to what you were saying about that third down deep in the Vikings zone last game where there was just nobody there in that kill zone, and they got that easy first down by throwing to the tight end. So, if the 49ers are back to what they do best, this could be a nice scenario for them. I was looking at Joe Burrow's plays, and he usually takes a lot of his snaps out of the shotgun. This year, he's exclusively taken all of his snaps out of the shotgun. There might have been one or two from under center, but I think that's all kind of related to the calf injury and his lack of mobility and the Bengals not wanting him to have to deal with a pocket and move around in a pocket. Point being is that, if that's still an issue, and Steve Wilkes noted that this would be an opportunity for a reset for the Bengals coming out of the bye, that maybe they start to go back to the pre-injury stuff that they were doing. But if it's like what they were doing in their first six games, it does mean that he's going to be trying to get the ball out quickly, that the downfield stuff might not be as readily available. So that does play into the 49ers' hands if everybody's healthy and if they are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And coming out of the Vikings games, I think that is a big if.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
We've been talking for about 40 minutes here. Do you want to get into our predictions for this game, David?
Yeah, let's get into the predictions. I was actually just down at the Canyon Inn. I was making my way up from Santa Clara back to San Francisco. Those of you who aren't familiar, the Canyon Inn is in Emerald Hills, part of Redwood City. And back when the 49ers used to have their facility in Redwood City, it was only a mile and a half away from this restaurant. It's a great bar called the Canyon Inn. They have an awesome double cheeseburger. And the owner there, Tim Harrison, back in 1981, was trying to find a way to drum up interest, business interest. And he knew that some of the 49ers, John McVay, those guys would come through to get burgers there. So, and the 49ers weren't very good at the time. So he said, hey, whenever the 49ers win this week, the entire organization can come in and eat for free for an entire week after the win. And obviously the 49ers took him up on the offer. But the thing is, they won 16 games that year, Matt. They went 16-3.
That's a lot of free burgers.
It was $10,000 to $15,000 worth of food that they had to give away at a time when they were only making $60 to $80 a day in that restaurant. But it's still in business today, which goes to show you that the promotion worked. And he ended up doing the same thing for the 49ers from 1981 to 1988. Anyway, the way that I'm tying this all together is that's the span of time in between the 49ers' two Super Bowl victories over the Cincinnati Bengals, right? 81, they beat the Bengals for their first Super Bowl. 1988, they beat the Bengals for their third Super Bowl. And they moved to Santa Clara when they built their new facility. So the promotion ended. But there's going to be over 100 alumni at this game from the 1981 and 1988 teams. Eddie DeBartolo Jr. is going to be there. I was just at the Canyon Inn, and I saw a picture on the wall of Tim Harrison with Eddie DeBartolo Jr. So the 49ers-Bengals history, great stuff. They're going to try to tie it into the past. And when I make predictions, I always like to bring up this franchise's history. And I can't predict them to lose when they're hosting the Bengals and all these alumni are going to be back. So my prediction is 26-21, 49ers are going to beat the Bengals. I was debating between 20-16 and 26-21. I hope that listeners know what the significance of those scores is. If they don't, those are the scores of the two 49ers Super Bowl victories over the Bengals. I decided to go with the higher scoring one. I do think that 26-21 sounds better just given the trends entering this game.
Yeah, I was listening to something that Jim Nance was doing this week, kind of previewing the game. And, you know, he might have been saying this because these two teams are playing each other, but he thinks that it could be very easily be a 49ers-Bengals Super Bowl. And why not? I mean, both of these teams, the last few years, have had early hiccups and then really gotten it together in the second half of the season. 49ers fans are quite familiar with that pattern, but I think it's been a very similar pattern in Cincinnati as well. And as we all know, it's the team that's hot at the end that usually goes to the big show. So we could have the third matchup between these two franchises, and then this would be a nice preview for it. I think in our predictions that you published today, David, I had the 49ers at 30 points. That might be a little bit too optimistic. I do think that this is going to be a big Christian McCaffrey game. I think Christian McCaffrey is absolutely seething. And David, you've been covering him since his college days at Stanford, but he seems like a guy that doesn't really forgive himself for mistakes like the opening drive fumble that cost the 49ers some points. And so I think he's going to be quite eager to make amends for that. And, you know, frankly, the Bengals haven't been very good at stopping the run. I think they'll shell out for that initially. First quarter, early second quarter yards might be hard to come by, but I think if the 49ers stay persistent on that, he could end up having a big game. So I'm going to go 49ers win 27-20.
All right, so you're amending it a little bit. That I respect it, 27-20.
Yeah, I'm lowering it.
Yeah. All right, well, I think we'll see what the spread ends up being. It's interesting because it was vacillating there this week. First, people thought, based on the Adam Schefter tweet, that Purdy wasn't going to play. Now it appears more likely they will. In case people are wondering about that, we won't know for sure until tomorrow at the soonest, because that's when Brock Purdy will have a chance to fully pass through concussion protocol. He was a full go at practice on Friday, though, so it's definitely trending in the direction of a yes for Brock Purdy. So the spread, I think it started at 5.5, and then it looked like it'd be Sam Darnold, and it moved to 3.5, then it bumped up to 4. By now, I'm looking right now, it's still at 4. So I wouldn't be surprised if and when we do get official word that Brock Purdy is playing, I wouldn't be surprised if it moved up to 5 again, because the 49ers are better than the Bengals from a talent perspective. Cincinnati's won 3 out of 4, but they're coming off the bye. And the 49ers aren't. The 49ers are coming off a short week. So it is like that boxing match. They just got to get to the round break right now, the 49ers do. And they want to land a punch before they get there. They don't just want to cower away. They want to get one more win, so they enter this bye at 6-2. All right, Matt, any other thoughts?
Yeah, no, other than the fact that at this stage, it seems like Trent Williams might be even iffier than Brock Purdy is. He didn't do much practicing at all. Now, Trent Williams is in the echelon where he doesn't need to practice in order to play on Sunday. And, the 49ers are hoping. It sounded like he still needs to make some progress in these next 48 hours or less now. 40 hours before the game starts in order to play. But that's a possibility. Probably playing on grass, Levi Stadium grass, helps the situation. But, Brock Purdy's blindside protector, I think, is very iffy at this stage going into the game.
Well, and that's interesting because the best player on defense for Cincinnati is Trey Hendrickson, plays defensive end, lines up exclusively over left tackle. But he can be had in the run game. He's not a good run defender. Cincinnati's given up over 5 yards per carry off of that left tackle position because Hendrickson just he likes to rush the passer. He's not really sitting there ready to react against the run. So this is the number 27 run defense in the league for the Bengals. If they don't run a ton of run blitzes, I think the 49ers, and they're not known to blitz overly much, I think the 49ers should be able to run. The question is, will they have Trent Williams able to block there? And if he's still a little bit hobbled, maybe it's better to have Jalen Moore with his mobility, fresh mobility blocking there. Because Hendrickson will pin his ears back and he'll get up to the passer. But he can be had in that run game. So keep an eye on that matchup. Anyway, for Matt Barrows, this is David Lombardi. We'll talk to you next time on Here's the Catch.